So the first thing that any business owner needs to understand is that a brand is not a logo. So that's an old concept. That comes from, you know, centuries ago. But we don't think of it as that anymore. A logo is a logo. You know, it's not a brand. A logo is a useful element when you're building a brand because you need to identify things. But the brand is something bigger.
Este é o podcast do Tiago Faria. Para mais episódios, vá a tiagofaria.pt. Olá, Tiago Faria, tiagofaria.pt. Bem-vindos ao episódio número 25 do podcast do Tiago. Eu hoje tenho a honra, um honra enorme de falar com o Sr. Martin Neumeyer. Ele é um escritor famosíssimo, tem já imensos livros escritos sobre branding e marcas e o que é que realmente significa uma marca e como se posicionar no mercado de forma eficiente e eficaz. E hoje vamos ter aqui uma conversa muito interessante. Hi Marty, welcome to my channel. Thanks so much for accepting the invitation.
Oh, thank you, Tiago. I'm really happy to be here.
Amazing. I really appreciate you took your time. You're on holidays in France. So this is really, really a true honor to be here with you. Thanks so much for your time. So I love to start these interviews by letting you, opening the stage for you. So for those who don't know you, of my audience, could you give us a quick intro of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, you know, I was a graphic designer for many years and also a copywriter. Advertising copywriter way back in the beginning. I did both of those things. And then I kind of started to learn that design and writing and communication don't mean very much unless you have strategy behind it. You have to have a concept and business strategy. And I started to learn more about that and eventually became a brand consultant while continuing to write and design and so forth. But mostly what I do now is I write books about branding.
Yes.
I consult with clients on branding. I give talks on branding. I'm also teaching classes in branding.
A true specialist in the matter.
The one thing I learned from branding is that specializing is very, very powerful.
It's very important, yes. I grew up to also understand that very much, and it's really true. So I'd love to go back to the very beginning. If you don't mind, I'm doing this recently to all my guests here in the podcast, but what type of child were you? It's very much a long time ago. What were your dreams when you were a child? Was it something similar to this? Did any of them come true?
It was pretty much this, yes.
Really?
I was a much loved child, for the first child in a big family of six. And, there was nothing really very dramatic in my life. And so I pretty much focused on what I wanted to do. I grew up in Los Angeles, California, where there was a lot of freedom for children. You could go anywhere and play and have fun. And I used to watch my mother when she was on the telephone. She would sit there talking on the phone, and she would draw little faces of people, but very realistically and beautifully, you know. Oh, wow. And I always admired that. She had gone to art school and was a fashion illustrator before she got married. And so when I was maybe 4 years old, 5 years old, I said, I want to do that. Can you show me that? She said, oh, yeah, it's easy. You draw this, you do that. And then I just believed it was easy. And so I started doing it. And then when you learn a skill like that at that age, you know, it's five or six or something like that, you get a lot of mileage from that at school. The kids are just, you know, they're wowed because how do you do that? You know, they're all drawing stick figures and little houses and a moon up at the top of the page. And I'm drawing, I don't know, clipper ships and, you know, birds in flight and things like that. So I think that's just got me on that track. And when I was about 7 years old, I declared to the rest of the students in my first, second grade class, I guess, that I was going to be a commercial artist. And that was it. I just said I was going to do it, and that's what I set my sights on. And it was only after I did that for many years that I started to think, well, maybe there's something more for me beyond just being a designer.
Okay. So, when did you realize that you started to focus on brand strategy versus simply being a designer? Was it during high school, university?
It just little by little, because I think what happened was I started being a designer, and I was doing, especially in the beginning, doing a lot of advertising. And I wanted control over my work, you know? And so I thought, well, if I could learn how to write the copy, then I could combine the graphics and the words in ways that are surprising and cool. But I have to have control over that. And that means I have to learn to write. And so I started doing that. And so writing is a step closer to strategy in my mind. Strategy takes the same part of your brain to do strategy. And so then I started to realize I need to be more strategic. My ideas have to be as strong as possible. And those ideas, they should be connected to business results, like some idea of how I'm going to get business results for my client. And if I can do that, then I can be paid any amount of money for it, because I'm getting paid for the results and not for just how many hours I work on something, right? So, I mean, but it took me a long time to get there. Maybe I was probably 35, 40 years old before I realized your age, right? that there might be something more for me, something I could contribute. And I also realized if I didn't take control of that, my work might be award-winning, but it's not really do very much for the company.
Given right? results, yeah.
Yeah, the results won't be amazing unless I take more responsibility for that.
And there's a ton of agencies focused on that, right? On the award winning and not for the results for their clients, right? It's incredible how it works.
Yeah, I mean, I love that process of doing work that's so good that you win an award, but it's also possible to win an award and do work that's not very, very powerful. It looks cool, or, you know, or it's surprising in some way. And I think all that's great. But I think if you can also aim it at something important, then you can really start to, you get the respect of your clients. They start asking you how they should do things instead of telling you how to do them.
Yes.
It becomes a lot more of a partnership with clients and less about presenting them with a bunch of things that they don't understand and may reject, even when they're really good. So once you start getting the respect of clients, you can show them a few ideas and they'll say, well, which one do you think is the best one? And I think this one is. Okay, let's go with that. Because they know that you're focused on results.
Absolutely. It's the same concept that I had Blair Enns on Monday. I don't know if you know him, Blair Enns.
Yeah, sure. He was here I know who he is. Yes.
Yeah. He was talking about that exactly, how most smartphone people just prescribe immediately before kind of making a diagnosis of what is actually the problem, what do they want to achieve. And that is exactly what you're saying. Makes total sense, right?
It does. It takes discipline, of course, to approach it that way. It also takes an open mind. You have to be open to the possibility that your ideas aren't all good. You know, that's hard for designers. It's hard for me. So, and so then you have to learn if they're good or not. And the way I started doing that in my 40s, early 40s, I started testing prototypes and sketches and mock-ups with actual customers in realistic situations. Okay. Very just sort of casually in the beginning, just asking people the right questions. And what I learned from all that is that I'm often wrong. even though the ideas I had come up with probably would win awards because I know how to do that. But what I'm not sure about is how to reach an audience or even find out who they are. So I started doing a lot of testing and more research into the audience and then testing things and improving them based on the results of the tests or the conversations I would have with people. And that's how I really got the respect of clients, because they realized it wasn't about me. It wasn't about what I thought was good. It was about what customers thought was good. And that's really been the focus of my work is, you know, all the stuff we do as designers is really not about us. It's about customers. And so that's where we have to look for the results. We have to see if we're getting results. We have to correct the course of action we're taking if we're not getting those results. And once you start doing that, a whole world opens up to you, and you start to realize that a lot of the things that designers think is good work is actually not good work. It's actually very bad work that looks fantastic.
Brilliant way to put it. So you mentioned that you interview customers. Is it something, is part of your process every time you work with some client? You always go actually talk to customers, not just based on some raw data or what the customers
say. Yeah, for any significant projects that are, that could change the course, change the fortunes of a company, something big.
Yeah.
I definitely don't want to leave that to chance. I don't want to leave it to what my client thinks is good. And so I also live by the same rules. If I'm going to say to a client, look, it's not about what you like. If you love the color blue, I don't care. That's not going to matter
it's
at all.
Yeah.
The matter is whether it looks like what we're doing is going to get the result that you want. And we both have to be open-minded about that. Okay. And so if they agree to that, I can't then say, yeah, but I like this one. I like this third idea. It's not going to work. So I have to talk with people, and I usually do it in a very sort of limited informal way where I can really ask a lot of questions. It's not like getting people to vote on something. It's not Survey Monkey, nothing like that. It's interviewing
actually talking to people
and asking them questions that will tell me what they're understanding from the work, right? Relative to the, and I also have to know what I want for this company. I have to know what the goals are. We have to agree on those first. So let's say I'm designing a package. Is the goal to sell more products? Is the goal to establish awareness? Is the goal to extend a line that's already successful? I have to know what those things are, because there are always trade-offs. You know, you can't have everything. So you have to decide what it is you're trying to do with your package or your trademark or your website, whatever it is. You have to kind of know what your
goal,
your top end goal is. What's the main thing we're trying to do? And once you know that, you know, designers are smart. They can start figuring out ways to get there.
Absolutely. And you mentioned copywriting. I also think that is, I think, one of the most important skills for anyone to have, even if you're a business owner. You need to have knowledge of this. Did you also study those guys from the 50s, the 40s, the 60s, the Ogilvies, John Caples? Was it your basis was studying books?
Absolutely, John Caples, although I hate that kind of direct mail stuff. but, you know, you can't deny the... He's very... he would be successful today doing online stuff, because he's very objective. Like he tests over and over. He doesn't care about art. He just wants to get the result. and then when he gets it, he scales it up. I mean, it's just like an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
Ogilvy was more ideological. He had his view of what advertising should be, and he was fairly logical, but there were some things he just had a phobia against. Like humor was one thing. He just did not believe that humor could sell anything. So big mistake there.
What about Eugene Schwartz? Everyone says it's the best copywriting book ever, the Breakthrough Advertising. Do you have the same opinion?
You know, I haven't really found that books on copywriting have been very helpful to me. What I found is just looking at work that really moves me and trying to figure out how they did it. Like, what is it about that copy, that particular group of words that is really powerful? And then step back, and what's the structure of the whole message? How does it start? How does it end? What happens in the middle? Mm-hmm. What kind of words are being used, and how does the copy work with the graphics to do something so that, you know, one plus one equals three? I mean, that's the idea. And you can't really get that very easily when you're working like a copywriter and a designer are working together. Usually it'll be one happens first, then the other one. Mm-hmm. So somebody will write copy, and then the designer will take that and illustrate that somehow or put it in some sort of order. But that's not how you get great ideas. It's by having those ideas emerge from two ways of thinking. We do see a lot of that copywriting art director teams doing really amazing work when they're in sync with each other. Yes. When they know how to fight with each other in the right way, they come up with amazing things. And usually, you know, the old story is, well, the copywriter came up with the image idea and the art director came up with the headline. You know, they switch off sometimes because they're so close. They work so closely. So, I mean, that's beautiful when that happens. But for me, it was just easier to do the whole thing myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand. In 1982, it was before I was born, you started Neumeyer Design Team, right? Which lasted for about 20 years. Can you remember what were the main mistakes you made during the beginning, those first years, that turned out to be incredible lessons for you now?
I had some basic misunderstandings about how business worked. Mm-hmm. And I was... I set myself up in a small town that I wanted to live in, Santa Barbara, California. But I wanted clients from outside of this town where, you know, where they had bigger budgets. So I was trying to get clients from Los Angeles and London and New York. And it was really, really difficult to get any significant clients because they just, their understanding is that there's a lot of talent here. I don't need to go anyplace else. So there's no need for me to like look outside of my area. So that was a mistake mm-hmm. on my part. And it just took forever to get anywhere.
Got it.
And then the other mistake I made was, I think, just insisting on doing things my way. Just what I was telling you about, not being open to what clients thought and what customers thought, and just thinking I just knew how to do this. And eventually I realized I was getting all my information from the history of design. I wasn't getting it from the real world.
That makes sense.
And then, you know, when I picked up and moved to Silicon Valley, a whole new world opened up. I mean,
Neutron, right, was founded.
Yeah, right. It was still Neumeyer Design Team at the time. It started out as that in Silicon Valley, and later I changed it.
And you had clients like Hewlett-Packard. You had Google, GE, Electronic Arts, and the focus was brand strategy. But what was your own brand strategy to find such massive clients?
So my own company brand strategy was, I was starting to realize that specializing is very powerful because, the way to get the most influence over the work you're doing is to do something that nobody else can do. Mm-hmm. You have to decide what that is. So when I started my company, what I was the most, let's say, sophisticated, relatively sophisticated designer in this small town. So if anybody wanted really good work from anybody, they had to come to me because I had all the awards and I went to a good school and all this kind of stuff. But there was a limit to that. And it just, I hit the limit pretty quickly. And I decided that I would move to Silicon Valley where there's lots of high-tech companies. And that would be my specialty. So I would only take clients that were in technology.
The vertical of technology. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a vertical. When I got there, I realized it was much bigger than anybody had thought. I mean, so what happened was I realized that, companies who'd made software didn't talk to companies that made hardware, and they didn't talk to networking companies, and they didn't talk to chip making companies. All these companies were actually in their own verticals, and they only partnered up They had to. They worked together, but so I needed to be more narrow. I was already more narrow than the other designers because I didn't know anybody that wanted to specialize in high tech at the time. They just didn't like it, right? They just thought, why would I do that if I can do a poster for a museum? So I thought, I think high tech could be really fascinating, and I don't know anything about it. I'm not technical, but they're not artistic. So, somehow we'll, forge something out of that. And so I just started doing that. And then I realized I had to be more narrowly focused to really make a lot of money. And I decided that retail software packaging was something that I could figure out how to do. And I'd be the only one that just did that.
Yes.
People thought I was crazy because they didn't think that there'd be enough money in just doing packages for software that was sold in stores. But it was. And for about 10 years, my little company took over that market. And when you do that and you get good at something, you get really great results. And the value of your work goes way beyond what you might be paid per hour. You get paid for, selling stuff, really, doing packaging in this case, that would increase sales maybe 3, 4, 5 times.
Wow.
Just by changing the package, just knowing how to do it.
So you're doing those Microsoft Windows packages, yeah? That people would buy from the shop.
But not that one, because that was an interesting thing. They asked me to come up and give a pitch for doing their software packaging, because I just finished doing Apple's software packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked it, and it was the results were great. So they had me come up, and I gave them a 3-hour. They had me there for 3 hours, asking every single question they could.
Unpaid?
Unpaid. That's a pitch. Abilities presentation. And so I did that, and then I didn't hear from them. The next thing I see is they're doing packages exactly like some of the ones I had done for
Apple. Oh, no. Jeez.
Yeah, which didn't make Apple happy, and it didn't make me happy. Mm. But actually, I had to say they did a pretty good job. So, but that happens sometimes. I actually found I was more successful in competing with Microsoft than in working for them, because they would only have so much work for me. But every single software company was competing with Microsoft, so they wouldn't want me doing Microsoft's packaging. So that's what I would. That would be my pitch. I said, "You want to compete with Microsoft? You have to out-package them." Because it's all about selling something invisible, and you have to be able to describe it, to strategize why it's help people understand why it's going to change their career or their life or their job, and all that's about communication.
Mm-hmm.
So in that period of time, I learned to be more strategic and start helping clients with branding.
Brilliant. And then Liquid Agency, it was a completely new project, or was it an extension of this new?
So what happened was the Neumeier Design Team is the company that I took to Silicon Valley, and we were doing all the packaging through that company. And in 2002, something like that, we had a bunch of things happened in the U.S. 9/11, the planes flying into the Twin Towers, which would completely shut down businesses because people were just panicked.
Panicked, yeah, of course.
There was a recession at the same time. And I had started a magazine called Critique about graphic design, which was had never made a profit, was losing money every year. So I was in not a great position. Then these other things happened, and all my businesses collapsed at once. And there was no work anywhere for anybody. So that's when I decided to move to San Francisco and reopen the business as Neutron and do something different, which was to teach, to help corporations understand branding and design, where it fit. So that's what I did. And that was successful. So that, and then I took that company and merged it with Liquid Agency. It became Liquid Agency. And I've been just working as a thought leader for Liquid for 10 years.
10 years now, yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That sounds fantastic. What a journey you had. So just for clarity for most people, because branding is very vague term for most business owners. What is a brand, and how can a company build a brand if brands are, in reality, in your own words, a person's gut feeling about a product or service or company, right? How can you influence that?
So the first thing that any business owner needs to understand is that a brand is not a logo. So that's an old concept. That comes from, you know, centuries ago, but we don't think of it as that anymore. A logo is a logo. You know, it's not a brand. A logo is a useful element when you're building a brand because you need to identify things, but the brand is something bigger. Mm-hmm. So that's just like you say, the brand is a customer's gut feeling about a company or a product or a service. It's what they think it is, not what you think it is. Mm-hmm. So remember what I said, you always have to be thinking about the customer. Mm-hmm. So you need to understand what they're receiving from you and adjust accordingly. And that's a hard concept for business owners to understand because they don't learn that in business school. And a lot of designers and advertising agencies don't even believe that. They're focused on selling design and advertising. So branding is really about creating that understanding in each customer of how your company is different and better than another company or your product or your service. And so you need to monitor that very carefully, and you need to build up the right touch points. We call them touch points. It's all those places where customers come in contact with the company. Those are touch points. You have to manage those touch points, design those touch points so that you get the results you want in people's minds. Mm-hmm. So that's the playing field, is each customer's mind is where you have to succeed. Mm-hmm. So obviously, if you're focused on other things like pleasing the client only, or what you think is going to win an award, it's going to be hard for you to focus on the playing field. You have to have your, it's like when you play soccer, you have to have your head in the game. You have to be right there, and you have to see the whole playing field, and you have to see what the competitors are doing. All that stuff's really important in branding. And it doesn't exist really in marketing or advertising alone. It's something else. It's something above marketing. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that it's hard for, heads of businesses, leaders of businesses to understand that branding is lives at a higher plane than marketing. Marketing is a function of branding. Mm-hmm. Product design is a function of branding. Branding is the goal. Branding is how you manage your customers and their understanding of who you are. Exactly. So that's primary importance. So the CEO has two things to worry about: the inside of the company, the employees and what the employees are doing, and the outside of the company, which is customers and the public and what they think of the company. So those two things have to align. They have to say the same things. And it's a big job. So it's not something a marketing director could do in his or her spare time. It's a full-time job, and it's very important. So Steve Jobs is a good example of what I would call a chief brand officer. So he was running the brand at Apple. So that was the products, the product design, the communications, the advertising, all the conversations with the developer community, all those things he was very interested in. He was not very interested in finance, shareholders, or any of that. That's what a CEO typically has to worry about. Yeah. Steve Jobs, that wasn't his forte. He had somebody else do that. So, but I think what companies need is more people like Steve Jobs, not necessarily as CEO, but as CBO. And when we get that, then everybody's going to work better. You know, I mean, designers will be able to do better work. Advertising agencies will be doing better ads. Product designers will be making better products because you have someone at the top to make room for that, right? And to demand it.
So someone that thinks, what are our consumers thinking and feeling about us, right? Someone that focuses completely only on that and how to influence it, right?
That's it.
Amazing. And if, as you say, people do not look for features or benefits nowadays, right? They're looking for something more emotional, right? What kind of things should we influence then?
Well, they're looking for meaning. They have choices. They can buy all kinds of things. But what they say in their minds is, you know, if I buy this product, what does that make me?
Yes.
Who am I?
Who am I?
what tribe am I joining? What group of people am I aligning with? Right? It may not be conscious, but people do it because we're all tribal kind of people. We're social people. So we want to know what other people like us are doing. Right? So, so that's the kind of thing you have to pay attention to. And it's pretty subtle. It's pretty,
absolutely.
Yeah. And it changes, you know, all the time. So you really have to stay on top of, the understanding customers have about you.
Absolutely. Create tribes. That's a really great way to put it. How do you nowadays communicate that on social media? Basically through design, transmitting emotions. What kind of things are being done nowadays in social media to create a brand?
You know, social media doesn't function very well as sort of an advertising medium.
Okay.
Much better for just listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, listening to customers, like starting conversations and listen to what they say and listen to who is saying what.
Mm-hmm.
And you can figure out which ones of your customers are the smart ones, the ones with who are visionary, who can see things that other people can't see, like what they would love for you to make next or what's missing in your company. Those people you pay close attention to and you listen to everything they say. A lot of other people are just followers and they just, you know, what they say is fairly predictable. But I think if you listen carefully, you can see what the next move it should be. You know, you'll hear about the difference between you and your competitors. You'll hear a lot. So I think that's what it's good for. It's
a listening platform.
Tool. Yeah, it's a listening tool, a listening device.
Brilliant. And you mentioned that to become a charismatic brand, you need to differentiate, collaborate, innovate, validate, and cultivate, right? Those are the five things that are on your book, the amazing book that the Brand Gap that I recommend to everyone. I find your differentiate, the three little questions, absolutely fascinating. The who are you, what do you do, and why does it matter? It really makes you think about your positioning. But this is like the starting point maybe for starting a brand conversation with a business owner, right?
Well, I was introduced to those three things by a friend, a colleague doing the same thing.
Okay.
He's a little bit more advanced than I was at the time, way back. he said you could bring an executive meeting to a halt with just those three. You could make everybody stop talking.
Oh.
If you just said that, they would just...
What?
Like, you just bring the conversation to a much more profound level.
Absolutely.
And then you say, well, if you can't answer those questions, how are we going to work together?
Sure.
And so any designers, I recommend that, those three questions. And what you're looking for is, you know, okay, so who are you means, you know, why are you in this business and not some other business? Why you?
Why
you? Why not somebody else? What's the connection between you and this business that makes it so important that you're in it? What do you do is what business are you in? What category do you compete in? You know, are you a retail bank? Do you make electric scooters? What is it that you where you compete, because that decision of who to compete with decides everything. And then why does it matter is the hardest one. It's like, why should a customer choose you or your product over somebody else's? Why should they do that? So that gets into differentiation and making products compelling and all that, where designers excel in doing that. So those are the three. So if they can't answer those questions, you have to say, okay, we got to back up and answer those questions, because I can't do my work. I don't know who you are, you know, why you're, you know, what category you're in, and how you're going to differentiate yourself from competitors. If you can't do that, it's just not going to work very well, because it'll just be, maybe we can look a little cooler, or we can try harder, but we're never going to really get something that moves the needle. It's never going to be this huge success that you get from truly being different to begin with. I mean, if you have to have that built in. And so it's interesting for to see what happens when you say that to a company. You start thinking, well, yeah, the problem isn't the design or the communication. It's structural. It's in the company. It's how we work. It's what we offer. If we can't make that different, it's going to be hard to do anything else. And they, you know, that gets them to sort of back up and start to have the courage to be different. And that's really hard for people. I just think human beings don't really want to be different. We just want to fit in, really. And we like to learn from other people. And if we see somebody doing well, we copy them.
Try to mimic it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's how we learn. But that's not how you win in business. How you win is being different and in the right way. And that is a high art.
Very, very true, my friend. Marty, we are reaching the end. I just have four more questions, a bit less about branding and more about you. But I'm always curious to know if in the past 5 years, if you've created any new habit that drastically improved your life. It can be business, personal, anything that you can remember?
Nothing that stands out except just becoming... just building on the discipline that I've been working on my whole life and just sitting myself in a chair and doing work. I think where we all tend to make mistakes is we think that because we don't know how to do something that we'll never know how to do it. Right. And I think you need to like open up a little bit and say, just because I can't do it now doesn't mean I won't be able to do it. That doesn't mean I'm going to turn around and in a year be playing a grand piano in some big concert hall. That's not going to happen. I don't have those skills. It would take me forever to do that. But I can be better in the direction that I'm already going, you know.
Yes.
So if you're a designer, you could learn to be a brand person. If you're a brand person, you might learn how to be a company leader. You know, you can always just imagine what could be the next big step for you, and then take small steps to get to those. And I think a lot of us, we're just thinking too small.
Unfortunately, it's true. Can you recall what was the worst piece of advice someone has ever given you? That hopefully you did not go through with that advice. Maybe you ignored it.
Boy. Become an accountant was one that I got in high school. And you said, look, you need a profession that you that's always going to be there and that's going to have money to raise your family and so forth. And I think I would have been a complete failure or very mediocre as an accountant, and certainly not very happy. So I didn't take that advice.
Thank God for that. Follow anyone on somebody online for advice or inspiration about the topic of branding?
Yeah. For branding, Clay Christensen is worth studying for his big contribution to branding, which was just the idea of disruption. So Clayton Christensen, his book is, what is it? I'm drawing a blank now.
I'll have to put in the show notes then later.
The Innovator's Solution. The Innovator's Solution is very good. And once you sort of grasp that, you've kind of got the essence of Clay Christensen's. See who else is good. David Auker is good for the business side of branding.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. You know, I think mostly at my stage, I'm not looking at people who already do branding very well, because I think I'm kind of now drawing inspiration from a lot of other things.
Yeah.
I learn more from Shakespeare than I would from, from another author. So I don't have any, like, people that I just have to follow. But I did for a long time. And I think that's the way you learn, is you find somebody who's better than you and you just devour everything they do.
Yeah.
And I did all. I really learned a lot from the authors Trout and Rees, Jack Trout.
Trout and Rees.
Their idea of the concept of positioning was huge for me. And I found out about them in 1970, before you were born. it was amazing to me, like, that so simple and so powerful. And then I always thought, like, I'd like to contribute something like that. I wish I could think of, you know, and I think I finally did. And I think I built on what they had already started with positioning, and I found a way to describe how you take positioning and you combine that with design, because you have to have both. I mean, positioning without design is useless, and the other way around is useless too. So design needs positioning, it needs strategy, it needs great concepts that produce business results. And there was nobody that described how you connect those two things together. So I think that's what I've been trying to do. And I found that I enjoy that challenge of describing how to do that. So, you know, I don't know if you know, but I have a new company called Level C.
Oh, no. Okay.
Level C, to teach the material from my books at five different levels of learning. So it's kind of like getting a black belt in karate. You start with one, go to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And I'm giving these classes around the world.
Okay.
Just started doing it. So London was last year, and we're going back to London in October. London, Hamburg, Bordeaux, Glasgow, and someplace else that slips my Lausanne, Switzerland. So those five.
Lisbon anytime soon?
I hope. You know, what we need is somebody on the ground in Lisbon to help us bring people in and organize help us organize the event, do some social media for us, because I don't think we can do it alone. We don't have enough connections there. But we'd love to do Lisbon. It's a very obvious target for what we need. So many good designers there. And we just need, you know, we're just waiting to meet the right people. But we will be doing this all around the world. And eventually other people will start. I'm teaching the classes, but eventually people will learn how to do it. And they'll get a chance to teach the classes too. And that's when they will really start learning, when they teach classes. So that's at the fourth level. So it starts out with all the material in the brand gap. That's the first class. Then it goes to ZAG, all that material. And then it goes to the brand flip. And then you start teaching classes. And eventually you get to the highest level, where you can be a thought leader yourself, or you can run branding from the very top of a company, like Steve Jobs, without being a CEO. Learn how to be a CBO. And that's going to be, I think, a huge position to get in. I mean, just beautiful position to be in. I think it's going to pay a lot of money for people who get the right companies. I think a lot of money. And so finally, those of us in branding can start to get the prestige that we should have. Once you start being paid a lot of money for what you're doing, it changes everything for everybody in that field. So we haven't really gotten there yet, and I think that's the next thing, and I think it'll be happening in the next 3 to 5 years. So it's a good time to start trying to get, you know, for people that see themselves leading a brand from inside a company, this is a great opportunity. Or for people that want to do what I'm doing, which is be a thought leader, write books, make videos, have followers, and be a consultant. So we're teaching that too. So that's my big thing right now, and that's why I'm here in France, just getting ready for that. So if any of your listeners want to join it, I mean, Bordeaux isn't that far away from Lisbon. In fact, Europe is.
Ryanair flights is quite cheap now to go around Europe.
Yeah. So good. So yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Fascinating, Mario. Fascinating stuff. We reached the end. Do you want to share how can people know a bit more about you or any links, anything you'd like to share? Yeah.
They can follow me on my personal website, which is martineumeier.com. And I won't bother spelling Neumeier. I guess you'll have to.
I'll have to do it. Yeah.
They can go to levelc.org and find out about the classes. And you could connect back and forth between those two websites just by going to either one. So those are the two ways. You can follow me on Twitter or, better yet, on LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is a better platform for serious people.
That's what I found you. So it really was worth it.
Yeah, that was great. Okay, thank you so much, Iago. That was very... great experience. Thank you.
It was an honor having you here. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll be in touch.
All righty.
Bom, foi então o final do episódio 25 do podcast do Tiago. Espero que tenha gostado. Foi extremamente valiosa esta entrevista. Acho que retirou daqui bastante valor. Se gostou do vídeo, por favor, deixe o seu gosto, subscreva o canal. Faça todos os sociais para me ajudar a levar este podcast a mais pessoas, que para poder ajudar mais empreendedores a crescer os seus negócios. Muito obrigado pelo seu tempo e até à próxima.